Welcome back, everybody, to the Across the Sky podcast put on by Lee Enterprises and our Lee Weather team, coming to you with new episodes every Monday, wherever you get your podcast, talking all things weather. Joined with me is our whole team. We are back. The gang is back together. We have Sean Sublet at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, Kirsten Lang at the Tulsa World, and Matt Holliner in the Midwest. It is spring break time for many of us here. Although I know in the Midwest, March is certainly another month of winter many times. Matt, what is going on with you?
Yeah, I had my spring break and I was looking forward to some warmer temperatures in Nashville. I was like, all right, I'm going to the South. I'm going to warm up. Well, apparently I brought the cold with me, because when I got to Nashville, even though it was warmer than in Chicago, it was not as warm as I expected. I met up with some friends from Texas and they said, oh my gosh, it's so cold. And I'm like, it's not that bad. So I've learned after interacting with them that I've toughened up. And then I came back to Chicago and it was starting to warm up in Chicago, and then went out for St. Patrick's Day and the cold came back. It was a really cold St. Patrick's Day. And then kind of a week started out pretty quiet, but now Wisconsin getting some more snow. Now we're in late March. You know, the good thing is every time these systems come through, it seems like fewer and fewer places are getting the snow. More places are just getting rain. So I like that trend. We're going the right direction, but we're not in the clear from winter yet.
The trend is your friend, as they say. And also, too, how is the Green River in Chicago?
Yeah, it was. I missed the actual dying. I was in Nashville for it, but I was there last year. So by the time I got back from Nashville, it already faded out. But boy, let me tell you, it is bright green. I saw it last year. It is a sight to see. It is worth coming to Chicago for the trip. Just bundle up. I always tell people St. Patrick's Day in Chicago is a lot of fun, but it's probably going to be chillier than you'd like. The best time to visit Chicago is the summer, but if there's another time to come, it is St. Patrick's Day. It is a sight to see.
Gotcha. Sean, do we have green rivers in Richmond?
Not if we can help it. Not if we can help it. We like the rivers the more natural way.
Gotcha.
But for us here, I think St. Patrick's Day, I kind of think of it as the end of winter. I know there's so many different ways to think about winter versus spring, but that's kind of the climatological time where you should stop expecting snow, right? And of course, we're 70-something today. We're going to get a backdoor cold front for tomorrow and Friday. So we're in the thick of it now, this battleground between winter and summer. So we're really getting it off the ground here in central Virginia. So it's going to be a lot of back and forth here over the next several days.
And those backdoor cold fronts, Sean, such a pain in the butt, as you tweeted on March 22nd about how, it's just a matter of miles for who's in the cold and who's in the warmth. I, just to the north of you, are in the 50s, Sean.
Yeah.
So close to you.
But, you know, we look at the guidance, and just real quick here, it's wild. You'll look at the numerical guidance and it will suggest that, you know, your temperature at 2 o'clock in the afternoon is going to be 50 degrees 10 miles north of you, but 80 degrees 20 miles south of you, and it's not raining. So that's wild. So I don't want to say it's hopeless, because it's not hopeless, but man, this is a situation where if you're right, you're lucky. It's tough, man.
Yeah.
This time of year is tough.
Not many backdoor cold fronts to worry about in Tulsa, I don't think, Kirsten, but spring's on the way.
Spring is on the way. Yeah, I was just checking our current temps, because we have a system coming through today that's bringing some severe weather. And where I am, it's currently 73 degrees, but then one county north of me, it's 55 degrees.
Oh,
so,
nice.
You know, we're just right there. We're right there on the edge, and it's stalled out. And so we will be the recipients of some heavy rainfall along that stalled front, as well as some severe storms. But, things pretty quiet otherwise. Spring break was quiet. It got cold, which forced everybody like myself who stayed in town to go indoors. And so it was mass chaos anywhere I took my children, which was fun. And I personally decided that if I'm not leaving for spring break, I'm no longer a fan of it. So, that's where we are here.
Did you guys like usually go away like on spring break, like when everybody was younger?
We were so close to like the Gulf, because we've talked about this a ton. Myself and Matt, we lived in San Antonio. we were so close to the Gulf Coast that, Matt, I'm sure you just went down to the beach, right? It was just like a 2.5 hour drive.
I always check the forecast because those cold fronts will hit Texas too around spring break. Inevitably, it seems like somewhere around spring break, like the week might start warm or might end warm, but at the beginning or the end, a cold front comes through, and then all those spring breakers, even at South Padre Island in deep South Texas, sometimes, you know, they need to put on a few more layers than
what I mean, I have definitely spent my fair share in sweatshirts at the beach in Texas on spring break. That's for sure.
Yeah, I actually want to share some because I was actually down in Sarasota, Florida for spring break, sunny Florida for 2 to 3 days. And I did something that really I'm probably only going to do a couple times in my life. It's really like history in the making stuff that I did. I was really proud of myself that I was able to do it. I actually pumped my own gas last week. You guys ever do that?
Yeah, man. I think everybody else does that except for you in Jersey. And really? I think in Oregon. I don't know if they've changed it in Oregon.
Some parts of Oregon, in rural Oregon, they can.
But welcome to the real world, buddy.
Yeah, how'd it go, Joe? Did you have to get someone to help you out, or did you just, you know?
Well, I'll give you the play-by-play. I went to the gas station. First, I sat in the car for 10 seconds, and I was like, oh, wait, I'm not in New Jersey anymore. So I got out. Now, I have to tell you, like, you know, you're not used to seeing the pump in front of you. So I'm like, geez, like, first of all, the pump's pretty short. I'm like looking down at it. And then I'm like, you know, do I put the credit card in first? Do I take the nozzle? Do I take the pump out first? You know, I got to make sure I got to hit the button on my car so the nozzle, you know, so the gas cap comes off. So, you know, I ended up putting the credit card in, and then you have to hit what, you know, octane you want. And then you get in the pump, and then like there's that little thing that you can, you know, pull that it keeps it locked in place. So the gas just keeps coming out. You don't have to hold it the whole time. And then I got filled it up, and then it popped. It was like $29.79. I'm like, well, I've seen this story before. People get it up to $30. I'm going to do it the same way. Right on the money. $30 ran the money. First
life
time
skills,
in
4 years. Life skills.
Yeah. Essential life skills. You know, Shawnee, my wife, she says she's never pumped her own gas before in her life.
Wow.
So this is next. I asked her if she wanted to do it. She said no. She said she's good. So it was really a truly rare thing that happens in my life. And I was happy to finally get to it in Florida this time. Hopefully it's another like 4 years at least before I do it again.
It's tough, right, man. So it's tough.
It is. Life's hard out there, guys. So anyway, speaking of gasoline, no, I'm just kidding. Our next guest that we're having on for this week. Very special. Her name's Liz Lightman, meteorologist at the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma. Being that it's Women's History Month, it was great timing to have her on. She is the first female forecaster to issue a convective watch. That's either a tornado watch or a severe thunderstorm watch. So we had her on to talk about what the moment meant to her, the viral tweet that she had that really started a lot of this media attention for her, which has been great over the past couple of weeks, and how she got into weather. So we're going to toss it over to Liz, and we'll see you on the other side. So we are joined with Liz Lightman. She was the first female to issue a convective watch from the Storm Prediction Center. She is a meteorologist for the Storm Prediction Center. That is a branch of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Norman, Oklahoma. She's from the St. Louis area, went to the University of Oklahoma. She went to OU to get her degree, and she made a few pit stops at the National Weather Service along the way in Billings, Montana, as well as in Louisville, has been at the Storm Prediction Center for a couple of years, and we're very happy to have you on here, Liz, and we'll say congratulations to you as well. My first question for you is, when you put out that tweet saying that you were the first female to, you know, issue a convective watch, and it was a severe thunderstorm watch, what kind of feedback were you expecting initially?
No, honestly, I put out that tweet when I was walking to my car after shift. So my shift ended about 15 minutes after I had issued the watch. And I was just really excited because, you know, that's kind of a lifelong goal for me. And, you know, I wasn't really thinking that it would be a big deal. I thought, oh, some of my friends are going to think this is cool. My family, you know, I'm excited about it. And so I just tweeted it out. And then I wasn't on Twitter much after that. I had also posted about it on Facebook. And then I was off work the next day and I woke up and like my boss had called me or public affairs person was calling me and they're like, are you available for interviews? And I was like, what are you talking about? Why? And so it was kind of, it was unexpected and surprising, but awesome.
Liz, I was going to ask you, I think kind of, you know, the elephant in the room may be the question of why did it take us until 2023 to finally have a woman be in the position that that you are?
Yeah, I think it's a multifaceted issue of why it took so long. You know, historically, meteorology has been a male-dominated field. We've made some big strides in that over the last 10, 15 years, even since I started my career in the National Weather Service in 2006. There are many, many more females than there were even then. At the Storm Prediction Center in particular, the lead forecasters have sole responsibility for issuing those severe thunderstorm and tornado watches for the entire country. And we only have five lead forecasters. So it's a very limited position anyway. And once people are in those positions, they tend to stay in them for a really long time. Our leads average about 15 to 25 years of experience in that position. And so there's just not a lot of turnover. In the roughly 70-year history of the Storm Prediction Center and its former iterations, we've only had 36 lead forecasters. So it's a very specialized, very limited role and opportunity to be able to, you know, do that job. And so that's another part of it.
One of the things that surprised me is that when you did that tweet stream later on about how small a pool that is anyway, I can understand once somebody becomes a lead, they stay in that position for a long time. But you said there's five leads at the office, but
Yes.
that seems like a really small number to carry a very big load. As comfortable as you are, but commenting about that, is that something I'm kind of overreacting about when I think about only five leads? I mean, I know there's more than five people in the building, right? So can you kind of talk to about what the staffing generally looks like on relatively quiet days versus days that you know are going to be active?
For the most part, what you see at SPC on a slow weather day or a no weather day is what you see on our highest end days. We're very efficient in what we do. Typically, on a day shift or an evening shift, there are four forecasters who are covering the severe threat across the country. The lead forecasters have the sole responsibility for issuing watches. And then kind of their wingman or wingwoman is our mesoscale forecaster. And that is part of my regular job. I'm a mesoscale outlook forecaster. And the mesoscale forecaster and the mesoscale assistant, they write our mesoscale convective discussions. And those typically are they're talking about the environment that we're seeing ahead of storms developing and how we think that you know, the severe weather threat is going to evolve over the next couple of hours. And that typically comes out before a watch is issued. And so those forecasters are working very closely with the lead forecaster to kind of set up the plan for the day and, you know, make sure that we're on the ball in covering those threats early. Before a watch is needed to be issued. And then we have our Outlook forecaster, who is generally either updating our day one Outlook or issuing the Outlook for the next day on our day and evening shifts. And so those four people are covering the severe threat for the entire country. What I'm currently doing right now is training to be a fill-in on the lead forecaster desk. And so what typically happens on our days when perhaps we have a moderate or a high risk in our convective outlook is that we may have someone come in to assist the lead in case we do need some backup, if multiple watches are needing to be issued at the same time, things like that. And so on our busiest weather days, we may bring in one extra person to help, you know, cover that threat. But we have a lot of experience. This is what we do 24/7, 365. And so, you know, we're able to work really efficiently with those four or five individuals.
And so, Liz, just to clarify, has there ever been a female lead forecaster, or is that something that we're still waiting to happen? Or maybe you will be the first. What is the status of that?
There has never been a female lead forecaster. We started doing what we call cross-utilization training, and it's where the person in the lower graded position can train on the higher graded desk. So like our Mezzo A's can train on the Mezzo and Outlook desk, and our Mezzo Outlookers can train on the lead desk. And the requirement for that, we just started doing that in 2011. And so once you're in that position for at least 3 years, you can start that cross-utilization training as a fill-in. And so I am the first female in the modern era of the Storm Prediction Center. So since the mid late 90s to be a Mezzo Outlook forecaster. And so I've been the first one to have that opportunity to train on the lead desk.
Liz, speaking of the Mezzo scale, I saw on your Twitter page the day before that there were some new products to the Mezzo scale, suite of things that you guys issue. Could you talk about that and also just give a little more detail to people about what mesoscale really means and what a mesoscale discussion, would matter to someone who's listening in the general public?
So a mesoscale convective discussion is basically we highlight an area of severe potential that's a smaller area within these broad areas of severe weather outlooks that we issue. So on any given severe weather event, we could have severe potential stretching from Louisiana to Ohio. These mesoscale convective discussions will highlight a smaller portion within that broader area of where we're expecting severe thunderstorms to develop. And those discussions will talk about things like the timing that storms are going to develop. How are they going to evolve? Are they going to be individual supercell thunderstorms with a tornado threat? Is it going to be a line of severe thunderstorms with intense damaging winds or large hail? Things like that. And so that's what these mesoscale convective discussions are. We typically write them before a severe thunderstorm or tornado watch is issued, and they'll talk about the likelihood that a watch will be needed and kind of highlight the area that we're thinking is under the greatest threat in the short term. So that's our mesoscale convective discussion. And what we did recently, we have upgraded the graphic that goes along with that text discussion. And we've kind of modernized the look and feel of that graphic. We now have the ability to share things like live radar, live satellite, as well as other fields like surface observations and other types of environmental data. So that is really exciting that we've been able to do that.
Hey, Liz, real quick before Joe tosses us to break, I'm curious, in your time there at SPC, have you seen a much bigger interest in either the broader meteorological community and or the public in the mesoscale convective discussion product? I mean, it's not brand new from what I recall, but it seems to me on the outside that there's been this huge interest in this program or that product more recently. Is that true or is that a perception thing?
No, I definitely think that's true. So we've been doing the mesoscale convective discussion since, I believe, 1986. And so it's not a new product, but we're trying to issue these discussions more frequently. And we've kind of shifted to this paradigm where we're trying to fill that gap between when a watch is issued and when warnings are ongoing. And so we're trying to issue the MCDs more frequently once a watch has been issued, kind of talking about the short-term severe threat over the next 1 or 2 hours, things like that. And so, there's definitely this need and this desire for a more continuous stream of information.
Awesome. Well, we're going to toss it to break for just a little bit, and we're going to come back with Liz Lightman, meteorologist at the Storm Prediction Center, and the first female to issue a convective watch in history. We'll be right back with you on the Across the Sky podcast. Welcome back to the Across the Sky podcast, brought to you by our Lee Weather team. You can check out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts or on your favorite news website. We are here with Liz Lightman from the Storm Prediction Center. She's the first female to issue a convective watch, and she did so just a few weeks ago. We're going to toss it over to Kirsten, who had a question.
Liz, I mean, you know, you realize that you're probably going to be one of those people that young women look up to after this historic watch that you issued. Can you share with us maybe some of your role models that have inspired you throughout your career?
So I would say some of my kind of biggest supporters leading up to my career, obviously, were my parents. I've been kind of obsessed with weather since I was a kid, and my parents were always really supportive. My dad even would, you know, take me out driving around to look at storms and things like that. They would, you know, I'd use up all their rolls of film taking pictures of clouds and things like that. But they were always really supportive. And, you know, when I told them, hey, I want to move to Oklahoma and go to school to be a meteorologist, they were like, all right, well, looks like we're moving you to Oklahoma. So, you know, I can't thank them enough for, you know, just like allowing me to pursue my interests and kind of fostering that love of science and weather. And then in high school, I also had a really great earth science teacher who was also kind of, you know, a weather weenie. And, you know, she was always very supportive. And she actually would bring me back to the school to talk to her classes once I started my job with the Weather Service. And so, you know, that's been really great. And I've had a lot of really wonderful mentors in the Weather Service, you know, that have really set examples for leadership and, you know, the kind of, you know, leading by example, showing the kind of, you know, person that you want to be to help achieve our mission and things like that. The organization is wonderful to work for. And, you know, it's been a really wonderful experience.
And Liz, since we don't get many people from the Storm Prediction Center, it's a pretty tight-knit group. I'm wondering what advice you can offer people who want to, their dream is to work at the Storm Prediction Center, both men and women. We certainly hope more women as well, but for men too are interested in working at the Storm Prediction Center, what advice can you offer? What's the best thing you can do if you want to work at the Storm Prediction Center?
So working at the Storm Prediction Center for me was a goal that I had since I was in high school. And so I'm kind of a living example, I guess, of how to make it to the SPC. I would say some of my biggest advice would be when you are in college, you network, reach out to people. You know, you may not be in Oklahoma and able to come to SPC, but wherever you are, contact your local NWS office or your local TV stations, things like that. Make contacts, you know, volunteer at your local NWS office if they have those opportunities. As a student at OU, I volunteered at the Norman office for 2.5 years before I graduated. And so I basically was able to do the entry-level position already. By the time I had my degree. And I can't tell you how helpful that is when you go to apply for a job, because the way that the applications work for the Weather Service, all of your answers are ranked. And so you kind of score points. And so the more that you can say you know how to do, the better. And there are other opportunities within NOAA and the Weather Service, things like the Hauling Scholarship and things like that. Apply for those opportunities. Go to the AMS conferences as a student, you know, interact with the people who are in those jobs that you're interested in. And I know that can be really intimidating, because I've been there, and it can be kind of nerve-wracking to approach these people that you kind of see as a role model, or maybe kind of put up on a pedestal. But we've all been there, where you are as a student, and so we understand, and we love it when you come and talk to us, or you send us an email and ask questions and things like that. So reach out, network, apply for all of those opportunities, for internships or volunteerships, things like that.
Just being off of what you're saying about going to conferences and seeing people, I mean, that helped me a lot with, you know, me as I was a younger meteorologist, you know, in college and coming out of college and going to the AMS annual conference. I mean, they're great. I mean, I'm walking back to the hotel one night with Bill Reed, who was director of the Hurricane Center at the time. It's like, where else do you get to do this? I mean, it's incredible. You know, looking forward, I mean, do you want to be one of those people who are lead forecaster at the Storm Prediction Center for 15 or 20 years? Where do you see, you know, yourself as you continue in your field of meteorology?
You know, right now I've been a mesoscale outlooker for about 4 years. And I love my current position. Getting to do our convective outlooks is probably one of my favorite parts of the job. And so I'll probably, you know, stay in this position for a little bit, just because I like it so much. But eventually, you know, if the timing is right and those opportunities come open on the lead desk, yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that I would consider. And so, you know, that would be very exciting. To move up and be in that role and that position in the future.
What are some of the other changes that you've seen the most, either externally or internally, to the Storm Prediction Center? Not necessarily operations, but in terms of, and this goes back to kind of what we were talking about earlier, how the public interprets information from SPC. Well, I think it's obviously a lot different than it was in the pre-internet era, but how have you kind of seen it change in the time that you've been there?
So I've been at the Storm Prediction Center since 2010. And in that time at SPC and more broadly within the Weather Service, there has been a huge paradigm shift towards communicating our science. You know, so in the past we've been, and still, you know, we are a very heavy science and technical field. However, we know that, you know, a forecast is only as good as people being able to receive that message. And if people can't understand your message and put it into action, then you can have the best forecast in the world and it doesn't have as big of an impact. And so I would say some of the biggest changes that I've seen over these last, you know, 12, 13 years is probably... having a more public face to our products, coming up with ways to communicate better with a non-technical audience, providing graphics and information to our partners like our local National Weather Service offices, broadcast media, that they can use to help spread that message. Because really, SPC, I mean, we're very heavily, you know, technical and specialized. And so we rely on our partners at the local offices and our broadcast meteorologists to help, you know, disseminate that message in a way that is applicable to, you know, someone who isn't a meteorologist or an emergency manager, you know, the general public. And so there has definitely been a shift toward being just more attainable to a broader audience.
Liz, I'll ask the last question before we get wrapped up here. You've been all across the country here. Where's your favorite place to be? Has it been Oklahoma, Louisville, St. Louis, back home, Billings?
Oh man, that's hard because there's been things about every place that I've absolutely loved. I mean, I've been in Oklahoma now longer than I actually lived in St. Louis.
Oh, okay.
So it's like Oklahoma is home, but you know, St. Louis is like, I love that city. It is, there's so much to do and see, and I'm a huge Cardinals baseball fan and Blues hockey fan. So I love going back home and visiting and, you know, do so multiple times a year. Billings, though, Montana is beautiful. And if you love the outdoors, like I do, I love to go hiking and be in the mountains and things like that. It was a dream being in that location. So there's been something that I've loved about everywhere that I've been.
You know, it's funny. A couple hours ago, we had a meeting with the four of us. And I think Kirsten was saying how beautiful Billings in Montana was as well. So it's our second helping of Montana for today.
Yeah, it is. It's a wonderful city.
Those winters are awfully cold, though. That's the part that makes me hesitate. I've only visited Montana in the summer, and it was nice then. But then I see those temperatures in the winter. I'm like, ooh.
You know, yeah, they can get cold. I will say, though, that they're close enough to the mountains that, like, the bitter cold that you see, like, in the Dakotas, it doesn't hang around long there because you get those nice, warm, downslope winds off the mountains. And so typically, like, the bitter cold doesn't last too long there.
All right. Good to know when we go on our Lee weather team trip. Well, Liz, thanks so much for the time. You know, congratulations again, long overdue, but well-deserved that you had it. And, you know, we wish you the best in the rest of your career here at the Storm Prediction Center or elsewhere. And we'll look forward to having you back on hopefully sometime in the future. But thanks again for coming on the Across the Sky podcast.
All right. Thank you all so much. It was a pleasure.
We'll be right back to you in a brief moment. Thanks again to Liz for coming on. Really appreciate it. I know she's been all across the country doing media hits, and we're glad to have her here at Across the Sky. What did everybody think of having Liz on?
She's great.
I agree.
That's it, Kirsten. She's great. But no, seriously, it's, you know, there is a lot of mystery, even within the weather enterprise, those people working in weather, climate, water, about the inner structure of the Storm Prediction Center. So I was glad that she could shed some light on that because, you know, old man voice showing up here when I was coming up in the 80s. I mean, we all knew the Storm Prediction Center as undergraduates, but you knew that they didn't have any public outreach. They were just from SPC to, and it wasn't even called SPC back then, I don't think, but to the local weather service offices. That's all the people they talk to. And we're stuck with a lot of those legacy products, things like slide, elevated, moderate. I mean, those kinds of things weren't designed for public consumption. They were designed for planners, emergency managers, other offices, because there's so much statistics locked into what they do. And as Liz says, it's very much more of a scientific lab versus an external lab. So, but as we've seen in the communications age in these last 10 to 15 years, that's changing. And if you're doing important work, people need to know about it, and they need to know about it in a way that they can make sense of it.
I'm kind of like, makes me feel good that, like, you know, she's becoming like a mentor to people kind of overnight, you know, with that one tweet. Like, you know, she must, you know, over the years, decades, and I think we alluded to this, like, people, you know, especially young women interested in meteorology are going to look to her, and she'll be somewhere in that, you know, that history book in the weather field and meteorology. So I, you know, I feel really happy for her, you know, and I'm sure she probably, you know, is excited to take on this role as, you know, mentor to younger people. I've seen a number of her tweets, and she certainly, you know, understands, you know, her role when it comes to meteorology and it comes to younger women who are interested in the field. So it's you know, again, I think we were all legitimately surprised it took this long, but, you know, I do feel happy for her, and she did break that glass ceiling. So it was great to have her on.
Hopefully it's just the beginning too, you know, because it's one of those things where you want to have the diversity in our field. And I know that, you know, she's just, you know, kind of chipping away at that. And so I'm really excited for her, and hope that kind of opens the door. And, you know, in the future we have maybe more women in that role.
And Sean, as you mentioned, another thing that strikes me is, you know, how small the Storm Prediction Center is as far as the number of meteorologists they have, you know, and they've only had a fairly small number of lead forecasters. And that's probably part of the reason why there hasn't been a female lead forecaster yet. But I got to think, you know, we're just also seeing more severe weather than we did in the past. So I imagine it's not going to be long before they start adding to their staff at Storm Prediction Center. And I'm sure they will take all who are willing. And I think, you know, I said this at the beginning of the year in our weather resolutions to start 2023, hire more meteorologists. I think Storm Prediction Center is going to get on that too, because we need more and more meteorologists as the weather gets more and more extreme. So I bet it's not going to be long before, maybe it's Liz, we'll have a lead forecaster who is a woman, and hopefully some more female meteorologists at Storm Prediction Center and more meteorologists at all levels of meteorology.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to wrap it up for this week's Across the Sky podcast. We will be back with you next Monday. We're going to talk about flooding. It is spring. We got a lot of snow melt. We got more rain. We got more extreme precipitation. So going to be a good time to talk about flooding. We have plenty more topics as we go into April and May and months on end. If you have a topic or someone that we should talk to, give us a shout. We're all on social media. Just type in our names. You'll find one of us on some social media platform. But we appreciate everybody listening. We'll be back with you next Monday. And thanks again for listening to the Across the Sky podcast.